Tate v. Executive Management. Mr. McNeil.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. Al-Shafi Tate contends that he terminated a consensual sexual relationship with his supervisor. As a result of doing that, was terminated from his employment at Executive Management Services. Now, the jury found in favor of EMS on the sexual harassment claim, but found in favor of Mr. Tate on the retaliation claim. And the issue presented on this appeal is whether there was sufficient evidence presented to the jury upon which to support that judgment against EMS. We submit the answer to that question is no. Now, there are two issues to address here. One is whether there was protected activity, and the other is whether there's a causal link, if there was protected activity, to the discharge decision. On the protected activity question, first and foremost, the relationship between Mr. Tate and Ms. Bourbon, his functional supervisor, was consensual at all times. And as this Court has pointed out in the Mosher versus Dollar Tree case, consensual sexual relationships are not prescribed or not unlawful under Title VII, therefore can't amount to protected activity for the purpose of a retaliation claim. Mr. Tate made clear in the record that in his trial testimony that, as he said, everything was good until I said I wasn't messing with her anymore, which was the final altercation between he and Ms. Bourbon on Well, and that's giving under the standard of review, hell hath no fury like Ms. Bourbon scorned, because according to Mr. Tate, after he told her I wasn't messing with her anymore, she flew off the handle, told and sent him home.
But the adage was correct.
That's right. Absolutely true under the standard of review. But the consensual sexual relationship that he terminated was not unlawful. As a result, there can be no protected activity if it's nothing more than a paramour scorned in the workplace. Now, as this Court has made clear, the protected activity must be something that's unlawful by Title VII. So the underlying question is whether, moving past the question of the consensual nature of the relationship, if it was something more than that, and we don't believe the record supports that it was more than that, but nevertheless, can rebuffing a sexual advance by a functional supervisor as opposed to a legal supervisor ever amount to protected activity? And as this Court recognized in the Murray versus Chicago Transportation Authority case, there was no authority on that in this circuit. As both parties have pointed out in their briefs, the district courts have gone both ways on it. Think if it's a sexual advance by a supervisor standing alone with no adverse consequences attached to it, I don't believe it's a retaliation case. It's a sexual harassment case. If job consequences follow from the rebuffed advance, and it's a legal supervisor who has authority to change or affect the terms and conditions of the employment, you may have an actionable retaliation claim. But if the supervisor is not the legal supervisor, not imbued with the authority of the company to affect the terms and conditions of employment, you have a coworker situation. And in those circumstances, without that actual authority, the actor, the supervisor, is not aided in the agency relationship to bring about a change in the condition.
That's too complicated for me. I don't understand what you're saying. I thought your position was simple. I thought the position was he wasn't fired for opposing anything. He was fired because the supervisor of the supervisor decided, well, his supervisor says she didn't accept this job, so he's out. It's not that he was fired because he said you can't do this to me. It's, you know, this illegal practice. This is quid pro quo discrimination. If they then said, yeah, you're a troublemaker, you know too much about the law, so out, that would be retaliation. But I thought the point is, whatever he was fired for, it didn't have anything to do with his opposing anything. Isn't that your case?
Well, that is our case, Your Honor.
That stuff that you said, I didn't get all that.
Well, it's the first element of his retaliation claim. If he's not opposing unlawful conduct, he's not engaging in protected activity.
I mean, probably after he's fired, he doesn't like this, and he's trying to find out what happened and tell his side of the story. But still, I thought your case was he wasn't fired for that. He wasn't fired because he complained that he was the victim of unlawful behavior. He was just fired because the top supervisor decided if a subordinate supervisor says someone refused an assignment, that's all I'm going to listen to. Isn't that what happened?
And let's address that. That's the cat's paw issue or the causation issue. The parties agree there was no direct knowledge by the decision maker of this relationship. So it becomes a report.
Now, I think you're wandering off. I don't think the cat's paw, much as I like that, I don't think that has anything to do. I just thought your position was whatever he was fired for, it wasn't because he opposed an illegal practice, because he was fired for allegedly not accepting another, I mean, that was phony, but allegedly accepting another job.
That's right. And as far as Nancy Scheinman, the decision maker in this case, was aware, that's all that had happened. Mr. Tate had refused a job assignment. The report that she had received was that Mr. Tate refused to go clean another building in Fort Wayne as he was a floater and assigned to various buildings. And there's an altercation in the hallway that's witnessed by a number of people, including a security special deputy for the Allen County Sheriff's Department, who, in Nancy Scheinman's testimony, with whom she spoke before she made the decision to terminate Mr. Tate's employment. So it's her investigation into the process was that she talked to the supervisor, the direct supervisor. She talked to her boss, but his information was limited to what the direct supervisor shared with him.
Right.
And she talked to the security guard, or the special deputy, the next morning. And as a result of that, and in review of his file, seeing nothing mitigating there to retain his employment, fired him. Now, the contention is, by Mr. Tate, and that's all a ruse or a pretext, but as far as Nancy Scheinman is concerned, as the decision maker, the only knowledge she had, based on her investigation, was that he had refused a directive from the person directing his work. Now, Mr. Tate...
I just want to make sure on this evidence. So Scheinman heard from Bourbon, and then wasn't the testimony of the security guard was contradicted, right?
Well, it wasn't contradicted, Your Honor. What Nancy Scheinman said was, I spoke to Dan Hudson before the special deputy, before I made the decision to terminate the employment, and as a result of speaking with Mr. Hudson, I saw no reason to speak to Mr. Tate. What Mr. Hudson said was,
He didn't talk to her until weeks after the incident.
Well, that was...
And he didn't discuss what he observed.
Well, he acknowledged that it was possible that he spoke with Ms. Scheinman the next day, and in the written statement he provided, in which he testified about at trial, was that the altercation in the hallway involved a work-related issue, not a personal relationship issue. So what Mr. Tate is seemingly seeking is a mandated legal exit interview requirement whenever you're being fired for insubordination.
And I think you're re-arguing the quid pro quo. Suppose Schumann, is that her name?
Scheinman.
Suppose she said to him, look, the reason I'm firing you is that Miss Bourbon wanted you to continue having sex with her, and now she's very upset. And I don't want her to be upset, so I'm firing you. Now, that would obviously be extremely improper, but I don't see that it would be retaliation for anything.
Well, I agree.
It would have a retaliation for opposition.
Because
he's not saying he opposes this or that. He's just saying, you know, I didn't... Suppose he got his hearing with her and he says to her, look, Bourbon is lying. I didn't refuse an assignment. And then Schumann says, oh, I believe you, but you upset Bourbon. And then the important thing is she shouldn't be upset, so I'm firing you. So that seems to me a situation in which there's no opposition to an unlawful practice. It's a wrongful discharge, but it's not a retaliation for opposing an illegal practice.
I agree.
That seems to me the essence of your case.
I agree with you, Your Honor. I'll reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. McNeil. Mr. Myers?
May it please the Court, I have agreed with Ms. Oxford of EEOC to split my time, so I'm reserving just 5 minutes here. With respect to the claim, Your Honor, and I'll pick it up, I think, where you left off with Mr. McNeil, we would respectfully disagree. An employee has a right to say no.
What did he oppose? What unlawful or arguably unlawful practice did he oppose? Did he say, I don't like, you know, sexual harassment by superiors or this or that? Well, that's what I don't see here.
Okay. He did not say in King's English, I oppose sexual harassment.
King's English. Where is there any intimation that he is trying to draw the employer's attention to the fact that there's unlawful quid pro quo, you know, harassment going on?
When he was called into Don Bourbon's office and was again faced with the ultimatum the second time, the first ultimatum was, I believe, in October of 03. This was the second ultimatum. And that ultimatum.
Refusing to have sex with someone is not the same thing as opposing an unlawful practice. That's where I think you and the EEOC are confused. Right? It's opposing a practice because you think it's illegal. It's not refusing to engage in a practice. That's completely different. You could say, look, I think it's fine for you know, sex with superiors and all that. It's a kind of a, that's fine, but I don't like you, so I don't want to have sex with you. I'm married, right? That's his problem. He got married. He didn't want to have sex with her anymore. So, I don't see where the opposition to a practice comes in.
Well, Your Honor, when he said no to his supervisor, he was opposing He was opposing her sexual demands.
Sure, it's opposing a sexual demand, but that's not the same thing as opposing a practice. That's not saying it's improper for a superior to solicit for sex, saying, I don't like you. I don't want to have sex with you. There's nothing to do with... Look, the object of this retaliation provision is that people feel protected to file a charge, file a suit, or just complain, or just say, you know, to the superior, to the EEOC or something, without a charge, this is a wrongful practice that's going on here, and I'm opposed to it. And I don't see where he ever said anything like that.
And, Your Honor, with all the...
All he said in extenuation was that she was lying when she said he'd refused an assignment, which is fine. But, again, that's not opposing a practice. He didn't say it's improper to fire him for not having sex with her, right? He understood that wasn't proper for the company's own rules. He just didn't like being accused of being fired for an ostensible but false reason, which is that of not accepting the assignment.
No, Your Honor, he did not like being fired for refusing the sexual demands of his supervisor.
But are you saying that every time a person is wrongfully treated, is discriminated against, that person has not only the discrimination claim but the retaliation claim?
Under the facts of this case, that's exactly
what
I'm saying.
Why is this different from any case in which you're fired for an improper reason? You're fired for refusing sexual advances, which is basically what this case is. That's a very typical case. Superior wants to have sex with you, you say no, you're fired, so you bring a discrimination suit. You don't also bring a retaliation suit. Where's the retaliation?
The retaliation, Your Honor, is in the supervisor's reaction.
No, that's the discharge. That's the discrimination. You're fired because you refused sexual advances. That's the discrimination. You sue because you've been discriminated against on grounds of sex. You're suggesting that all those cases also have a retaliation a component, but they can't be right.
I'm suggesting that in some cases, the primary underlying discriminatory or harassing behavior can morph into a retaliation claim, and that's what happened here.
Because it's not, he didn't say, okay, I'm going to file a charge.
He didn't have a chance.
You fired me, I'm going to file a charge. And they say, well, if you file a charge, we're going to fire you. That would be retaliation. You don't have anything like that here.
And I'm not suggesting that, Judge. And I'm not saying that Mrs. Bourbon played by the rules. This happened instantaneously.
This doesn't have anything to do with retaliation for opposing a practice. Because you've confused being a victim of discrimination with opposing discrimination. And you're turning every single discrimination case into a discrimination plus a retaliation case.
I'm not trying to do that here. What I'm trying to say here
Give me an example of a case where you believe there's just discrimination and there's not retaliation.
A factual example?
Yes.
Well, if Ms. Bourbon said to Mr. Tate, listen, I want to give you a kiss, and Mr. Tate said, no, thank you. That's a simple that's a rebuffment of a sexual advance. There's no retaliation there. But in this case, what was carried with it was the ultimatum
of
termination.
Could he sue?
No, and I'm not suggesting that he would.
Okay, but I want a case where you have discrimination giving rise to a claim of discrimination, but not retaliation. Is there such a case where you can just sue for discrimination, can't sue for retaliation for opposing a discrimination?
Well, sure. I think that's regularly the case. If somebody reports sexual harassment and the employer properly, let's say they don't take care of it for a while.
That person isn't a victim of discrimination. I want a case where you're a victim of discrimination. You have a good discrimination claim, but you don't have a retaliation claim. Is there such a case?
Of course. Of course there would be such a case.
What would such a case be?
Well, for example, if Mr. Tate was sexually harassed, let's say that the employer didn't take care of it right away, and there was no termination and no threat of termination.
No, suppose this. Oh, so you think every time there's a termination, there's a retaliation claim?
I think that's the ultimate adverse action that can lead to a retaliation claim.
A vast number of discrimination cases involve a termination. Are you saying every one of those cases is both a discrimination case and a retaliation case whenever there's a termination? Is that your position?
Not every case, but I think
what's a case in which it isn't?
A case where, for example,
there's a termination, but there's no retaliation.
Yes, Your Honor. Let's say, for example, in this case, Mr. Tate was sexually harassed by Ms. Bourbon, and he reported it. It wasn't taken care of right away, but he maintained his job. There's no retaliation because there's no adverse action yet.
You're not answering me. I asked for a case where the plaintiff is fired.
Okay.
And you're saying that you can't think of a case where someone is fired and doesn't have both a termination claim and a retaliation claim.
I suppose that's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Meyer. Ms. Oxford?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Susan Oxford. I represent the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission as amicus curiae in this case. And I want to just follow up on the very last line of questioning. Of course, an example where there would be discrimination and no retaliation would be the example of Mr. Meyer's example where the supervisor was saying, give me a kiss, so frequently, so pervasively, that it amounts to a hostile work environment. But the individual is never fired.
So you subscribe to his fallacy that every time someone is fired, he has both a discrimination claim and a claim for being retaliated against for having opposed a practice.
Yes.
That's amazing. There's no basis in the law for that.
If there's the causal connection.
There's the opposition to a practice. Where did he say this practice of firing someone for refusing to have sex with a supervisor, that's an illegal practice, which I'm opposed to.
Title VII does not say that.
Where does he say that?
The Title VII's anti-retaliation provision does not require the employee to say, I oppose the following practice because it's unlawful under Title VII.
What does it require?
It requires that the individual oppose a practice which is unlawful. And the American Heritage Dictionary says one of the definitions of to oppose is to be resistant to.
So you're saying every time a person resists a harassment, he has an opposition claim? Is that your position? Every resistance, every refusal gives rise to an opposition claim? Is that your argument?
Potentially, but we...
Well, what do you mean potentially? I want potentially. I want actually.
Well, let me say that the EEOC has not taken a position on that particular question here. So since I speak for the government and not my own personal views, let me say what we have taken a position on in here. when Mr. Tate had the confrontation with Ms. Bourbon on January 13, he was not on that day ending a consensual relationship, as Mr. McNeil says. That he had done several weeks or months earlier when the issue first came up. He had said, I'm not messing around with you anymore. At an earlier occasion on that date, the consensual relationship was over. She responded by saying, yes, you will. You've got to choose between your wife or your job. She said that before January 13. Under those circumstances, it is the EEOC's position that where the supervisor has said, choose between your job or sleeping with me, and makes it a condition of continued employment, a threat which, by the way, under these circumstances...
But it has nothing to do with opposition. Suppose you said to her, I won't sleep with you because you're ugly. Now, that wouldn't be opposition to an unlawful practice, right? It would be entirely personal.
Right. Here, the unlawful practice...
And in fact, his reason wasn't that. The reason was he got married, so he didn't want to have sex with her anymore. So how is that opposition to a practice?
When he said at the several weeks or months earlier when he first said, I don't want to sleep with you anymore because I'm married now, that was not opposition. That conversation was not opposition. When she then said, you think about this. You have to choose between your wife or your job. I'm going to ask you, and you think about this carefully.
When she what said difference to him on does January that make? 50, Suppose
that
he just says,
difference.
I already told you I'm not going to sleep with you anymore. So, you know, bug off.
It is unlawful for a supervisor to make a condition
of... Of course it's unlawful.
Of,
we
and,
know
and
it's
it
unlawful. But if the opposition is not to the unlawfulness but to something entirely personal, what does it have to do with the statute?
Congress could not have intended that the retaliation provision has such a...
Look, the purpose of the statute is to protect primarily third parties who complain about... they've noticed an illegal practice in the workplace, they complain, and the statute protects them. That's the primary purpose. And, of course, there are cases where a person does, you know, either file a charge or some informal opposition, expresses opposition to a practice. So if Tate had said to Schumann or something like that, this Ms. Bourbon is trying to coerce sex and that's improper, then he'd be protected. But he never did that. He never suggested that he was opposing the practice of, you know, coercing sex. He was only concerned that he was being falsely accused of having refused an assignment.
May I respond? As EMS points out in its brief, Title VII's primary purpose is to prevent harm, although it also is to compensate for harm that has occurred. And so the first instance of preventing harm is not for the EEOC to come in and file an action or a plaintiff to file a private action. The first instance to prevent harm is for a company to take proactive steps. But even before that, in the case of sexual harassment, certainly the first step to prevent harm is for an employee to say no to a supervisor that is attempting to force sex on that individual as a condition of continuing their job.
Yes, but
if an employee can't say no
but if
and
the
keep
reason
their job,
is personal,
then the retaliation
but if the
provision
reason
has no
is
meaning.
Personal, but look, this is a freak case because he has a compelling quid pro quo discrimination claim, which the jury unaccountably refused. The mistake was to throw in the opposition thing, which confuses everything.
In fact,
because it's not an opposition case.
In this circuit, he would have a compelling quid pro quo claim in many circuits, but not in this one.
Well, when
the
he
jury
went
was
into,
charged.
Let me just get back to this January 13th. When he gets in the office, she closes the door and asks if he's made a decision, and that relates to the choice she had given him: sleep with me or be fired.
Correct.
And he told her no. There was this big scene. She made some comment about he didn't know who he was messing with and that she was going to get his job and she was going to have him fired. Right?
Yes.
And at that point, they're hollering in the hall and the security guard comes.
Yes.
And so there's no further dialogue between them.
Correct.
And then she tries to talk to the immediate supervisor, Taylor, but that person wasn't off-site. It's Bourbon who talks to the supervisor, so he never gets to talk to the supervisor.
Correct.
And he's told to go home, right?
Yes.
And then this court security officer doesn't witness anything. He just hears everything.
And not even all of it.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure what the status, what opportunity he had to complain about this treatment.
Right. He attempted to talk first to Bourbon's immediate supervisor the next morning, since he was told to call the office. He attempted to call the local district director. And when he reached her secretary, the secretary said, no, you have to call headquarters, the HR official at headquarters. And so, again, he could not reach Schumann. He followed the directions as he was told. He reached Ms. Lentz, who was dropping her child off at daycare and had a conversation in the parking lot on her cell phone that Lentz says lasted a minute or less, in which he identified himself and Lentz said, you're fired. The jury heard Tate's testimony that he attempted to say, may I explain, may I tell you what happened, and that Lentz said no. So
he never complained about the practice.
He attempted three times and was denied the opportunity.
About the false accusation of his having refused an assignment.
One important, if I may.
The jury was asked, plaintiff's retaliation claim alleges he was discharged for opposing the unlawful employment practice of conditioning continued employment willingness to remain in a sexual relationship. And he never did that. He never opposed it.
He opposed by saying no, and there have been many courts that have recognized that. I'd particularly urge the court to look at a case we cite, District Court case Black versus City and County of Honolulu.
Well, he wasn't opposing it when he was sleeping with her, was he?
No. That was a consensual relationship. But I would like to just quickly...
When he changed and opposed, it was for personal reasons.
That's
but
true.
But anyway, what would you want to say?
In this circuit, the jury was charged that in order to find a quid pro quo sex harassment claim, and this is at page 670 of the appendix, the jury was charged that they had to find that Don Bourbon was plaintiff's supervisor as defined by the law under Title VII. A supervisor is someone who can directly affect the conditions of employment. By this, I mean someone who has the power to hire, fire, demote, promote, transfer, the direct power to do those things. Under this fact, it's almost surprising that this issue went to the jury because there was no testimony that Don Bourbon had the power to directly do those things.
And what you're saying is that the plaintiff should have cross-appealed. Right?
That issue is not before this court. What is before this court is the retaliation claim.
Yeah, but the point is, because the quid pro quo claim was botched, and because he didn't cross appeal, we're asked to stretch this opposition thing to make up for the errors that have been committed in the litigation.
Judge Posner, you cannot say that the quid pro quo claim was botched. There's no appeal.
Botched.
This court has said that that's the standard.
That the instructions were wrong. I agree
that's
with
the
you.
The correct instructions in this circuit.
I agree with you.
I would just point the court to the attention, Rhodes versus Illinois Department of Transportation, a 2004 decision in which Judges Kudahy and Rovner point out their dismay with this circuit's standard for finding who is a supervisor in a quid pro quo harassment claim, but nevertheless affirmed the decision in that case because they felt bound by this circuit's rule, which is different from the EEOC's position in many other circuits.
Maybe we should correct the rule without screwing up the opposition statute. Okay, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Mr. McNeil, you may have some time. Yeah.
Your Honor, unless the panel has any questions, I have no further comments.
Okay, well, thank you to both counsel and to the EEOC for your participation. Our last